Okay, we're going to talk today about vegetarianism, both from, to a certain extent, from a hashkafic point of view and from a halachic point of view. I don't claim that we're going to cover everything from beginning to end and all the opinions, but certainly to get at least a bit of an overview of what the main ideas are in terms of hashkafically, whether it's a what the Torah perspective is about it, and also to examine a couple of the halachic issues that might arise or might not arise regarding a person being a vegetarian. In order to start the discussion, we have to go back a little bit in time, basically till Adam HaRishon. And if you take a look at source number one, from Bereishis Perek Aleph, Adam and Chava have been created, and the pasuk says, "Vayomer Elokim, Inei Natati Lachem Et Kol Esav Zorei Azera Asher Al Panei Kol Haaretz, Vet Kol Haetz Asher Bo Pri Eitz Zorei Azera Lachem Yeh Lachla." That you can, I'm giving you to eat everything that grows from the ground. The Zera, the Eitz, the Priya Eitz, that's all for you to eat. ולכל חיית הארץ, ולכל עוף השמיים, ולכל רמי סל הארץ, אשר בו נפש חיה, את כל ירק עשב לאכלה ויהי חי. And I'm also giving everything that grows from the ground to the animal kingdom. And it's also for them to eat. Says Rashi, הישבה להם הכתוב בהמות וחיות למחו. הקדוש ברוך הוא gave the same foods, more or less, to the humans as he gave to the animal kingdom. V'lo hirsha la'adam uli'ishto lahamit beria v'le'achol basar. And he did not permit Adam and Chava to kill animals for food. Ach kol yerek esav yochlu yachad kulam. Everybody, humans, the animal kingdom, everybody is allowed to eat only things that grow from the ground. Ukishebo b'nei Noach. But after the Mabul, hitir lahem basar. Only then were people allowed, humans were allowed to eat meat. Shenemar. And he quotes the pasuk from Parshat Noach, after the Mabul. Kol remes asher hu chai, ki yerek esav shehitarti ladam arishon natati lachem et kol. So Rashi quotes source number two, the pasuk that says, "Kol remes asher huchai lachem yeh lachla, ki yerek esav natati lachem et kol." You can eat all that walks on the ground, as you can eat animals, like up until now you're allowed to eat vegetation. So Adam HaRishon, from Adam till Noach, they weren't allowed to eat. Only Noah and his descendants after the Mabul we're allowed to become carnivores. We're allowed to eat meat. And that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin in source number three. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Adam HaRishon lo uta lo basa l'achila. They weren't permitted to eat meat. Tichtiv lachem yeh le'achla. V'lochol chayat ha'aretz. V'lo chayat ha'aretz lachem. You can't eat the chayot ha'aretz. V'kshabo b'nei Noach yitir lahem. When Noach comes along after the Mabul, so they're allowed. Now Tosfot points out something, has an opinion here that not everybody agrees with. And Tosfot says that the Isser to eat meat was somewhat limited. Adam HaRishon wasn't technically prohibited from eating meat. What was he prohibited from doing? Killing to eat meat. Says the Tosfot in source number four, in Sanhedrin Nun Vav, Achol tochal v'lo evim min achai, the hadam rinan lekam, and that which the Gemara says later on, the lohuta l'adam harishon basa l'achila, haynu lahamid v'le'achol. Aval meita me'eleha shaya. B'nei na'adam harishon has no mitzvah of shechita, doesn't have to eat shechted meat. So says Tosfot, Adam HaRishon wasn't allowed to kill to eat meat. But if an animal died on its own, you'd be allowed to eat the meat. So, it's not that he had to be a vegetarian. He just couldn't kill to eat meat. The Yad Ramah, in source number 5 disagrees with Tosfot. First of all, the beginning of the Adramah is very interesting. He says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Adam Arishon lo huta lo basa l'achila, akol basa kamayri, v'afilu dogim v'chagovim. Not only couldn't he eat animals, he couldn't even eat dogim v'chagovim, fish and locusts, and grasshoppers, etc. He couldn't eat anything that was a living creature. It was all prohibited. But then, in the next bracket, he says, "Ve'it dedachke va'amrei dechiyamin elahuta labasa lachila animil elohamis lecha." Aval emet me'atzma mutar. He quotes the Bali Atoso to say that if it died in the tzon, he could eat. He disagrees with them. He says that if that's the case, then it shouldn't have said that he wasn't allowed to eat meat, which is what the Gemara says. It should have said he wasn't allowed to kill to eat meat. The Gemara says he wasn't allowed to eat meat. So the Yad Ramah disagrees. He says, even if an animal died on its own, Adam HaRishon wasn't allowed to eat meat, nor his descendants until the time of Noah. Not only not to kill to eat meat, like the Tosafot, but even if it died on its own, it couldn't eat meat. Okay, that's the introduction. So now, what question do we all have to ask? The obvious question. Adam HaRishon wasn't allowed to eat meat. Who was allowed to eat meat?
Noah.
What's the question? Why? What changed? What changed from that Adam for 10 generations they can't, and from then on after the marble they can? So why the change? Any suggestions?
Because by the time of Noah, they weren't differentiating between the animals and people, and they needed a reason to be above animals. They needed something that they were above animals.
Interesting, good. Couldn't differentiate between men and people, yeah?
Is it possible that after the marble, all like the things that grew from the ground was wiped out, so there was nothing for them, there's nothing else for them to eat besides they could have a table with them? So if they weren't allowed to eat meat, then they didn't have anything else.
So that might explain why they may have gotten a temporary dispensation for a few months. But this is permanent. This is since then. Yeah?
You read that sentence?
You read that Hadorot in what sense?
Meaning that...
Wait, from the human point of view or from the animal point of view?
From the human point of view, that it might be a lechachila situation for us to not be eating the meat, like, be eating animals as cruelty, but now we have other... I mean, I'm also brainwashed by our cook, but because other, like, we should be worrying about other things.
Okay, yeah. Maybe come back to that.
I think I read somewhere that because Noah cared for the animals and he worked so hard with them, he deserves
to be. Okay, I want to share with you 3 approaches. There's the Ramban, there's the Malbim, and there's the Sefer Ikarim of Rav Yosef Albo. And I think between all of you, you've touched on that. The Ramban says as follows in source number 6. He writes, Aval natan la adam uli ishto kol esav zorei azera v'chol priyetz v'lachayat aretz lof ha-shamayim natan kol yarek esav lo priyetz v'lo azraim vein machalam yachad kulam b'shave. Even in the time of Adam, they weren't exactly the same, but no one was allowed to eat meat. Acha basar lo ushabo ad b'nei noach kedat rabotenu v'pshuta shom mikra. And now he tells you why it was prohibited for Adam. And he writes something very interesting. By the way, before I continue, anybody here a vegetarian? Okay. Anybody here a vegetarian for ideological reasons? Okay, so listen what the Ramban writes. V'hayazet, in the 3rd wide line in source 6. V'hayazet mipnei sheba'ale nefesh hatnua. Anything that moves, meaning anything in the animal kingdom, Yesh lehem ktsat ma'ala b'nafsham. They have a certain higher nefesh. Let's say more than the plant kingdom. Nidbu ba lebalei nefesh ha-maskelet. They do share some traits with, I guess, humans. V'yesh lehem b'chirat, b'chira b'tovatam u'menizonoteyem. They're able to make certain choices about what's good for them. V'yivrchu min atza'ar v'hamita. And they run away from pain, from things that, when they sense danger. A plant doesn't. And a rock certainly doesn't, but a plant doesn't. But the animal kingdom has a sense of what's good, what's bad, where there may be danger. V'akatuv omer, mi yodei ruach b'nei adam ha'ola hi lamala, v'ruach b'ema yeredet hi lamata la'aretz. Now, if that's the case, so let's stop at this point in time. Why shouldn't we eat meat from animals? Well, not because necessarily feel pain, but they have a certain level in the hierarchy of life that we shouldn't be killing them and eating them. But if that's the case, then so what happened after the marble? Says the Ramban, the kasher chatu v'hishchit kol basaret darko ala aretz. But we know from the Midrashim say that when it came time to the marble, not only had the humans been totally degenerate, but somehow or another, who also had plummeted in morality, so to speak, even the animal kingdom. And they were breeding with animals they weren't supposed to breed with. The nigzar sheyamutu b'mabul. The animals also were decreed that they should die in the mabul. The only reason that some animals survived was, what's the only reason? Because of Noach. Ba'avur Noach hitzil mehem l'kiyum hamin. They only survived because of Noach. If it wouldn't have been for Noach, they would have been wiped out. Natan lahem reshut l'shchot v'lachol ki kiyumam ba'avuram. Now you have permission to kill them. They only exist because of you, Noah. Had it not been for you, they would have been wiped out. And therefore you and your descendants now are given permission to kill them and to eat them. Before the Mabul, they existed for their own sake. But after the Mabul, they only exist because of you, Noah. Then you and your descendants can kill and eat them. So, in essence, there was a certain kind of yuridat hadorot of the animal kingdom had a certain yuridat hadorot. They're no longer given the status they once had. That's the Ramban's approach.
How do you say that then Noah has the right to kill his son? Like now he has the rights over anyone?
What do you mean? Because Noah's sons were only saved because of Noah? I think that this may get to what we're talking about, Rabbi Yossi Valbo. One has to be very careful, and this is part of the problem that was mentioned earlier, when people start making comparisons between the animal kingdom and the human kingdom. So we're going to get to it, and you'll see the fallacy in the argument. But just hold off a little bit. The Malbim has a different approach. It's a little bit more pragmatic. So the Malbim in source number 7 says, Kol remes asher uchai lachem yeh la'achla. He says, Ki bimei Adam hayor gufot b'nei Adam chazakim. The human beings from the time of Adam until Noah were healthy. What's a little bit of the proof that they were so healthy? What? They lived very long. 900 years, 800 years, 700 years. They lived for a very long time. V'haperot lo nishchetu adayin. And not only were the humans healthy, but what was so unbelievably nutritious? The fruit, the plants. Any nutrition in the world that you needed, where could you get it from? The plant kingdom. And that's all that we needed, we had from plants. So why weren't we allowed to kill animals to eat them? It wasn't necessary. You don't need that. That's until Noah. Aval achar hamabul shenit kalkulu hamizono. The fruit that grew after the marble. The land wasn't the same anymore. Things changed after the marble. The grains weren't the same. The fruit weren't the same. The vegetables, they just weren't the same anymore. V'ha'adam huchan shiit pashet bekatzvei eretz v'iyim rechokim shemiyaz nasakor v'chom. And the people weren't the same anymore. We see after the marble, they start dying younger. What was now necessary for human beings? It was necessary to eat meat for health reasons. V'gam achar shechayu kulam ayidei Noach shepir nasam b'teva ayu kikinyanu b'rishusam. And he throws in the fact that Noach was the one who saved them. But the Malbim comes along and he says, listen, before the Malbim it wasn't necessary, they didn't need it, so why kill the animals? But after the Malbim it's necessary. The fruit isn't what they used to be, the vegetables aren't what they used to be, the grains aren't what they used to be, and human beings aren't what they used to be. They need meat. It has to be part of the nutritional diet. Plus, they were only saved because of Noach, so therefore it was allowed. Yeah.
Not the way things were supposed to be.
Maybe.
But why should the animals lose out for that? Like, the vegetation, if it was supposed to be good, couldn't Hashem have just kept the nutrients in the vegetation?
He could have, but maybe that's part of the marble changed the world. Even for Noah and his descendants, it's not the same world anymore. Noah was saved, the descendants were saved, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu could say it's not going to be the same world. People aren't going to live as long. The fruits aren't going to be the same kind of fruits. Even those who survive the Mabul will, have to suffer they have to learn to deal with a different world. So that's the second approach we have. Yeah.
Would there be people that said that if people today say that vegetarianism is healthier, then would there be rabbis?
So let's see. Right. In other words, you get the impression from the Malbim, by the way, both from the Ramban and from the Malbim, does anybody talk about that there's an obligation to eat meat? That we should eat meat? No, what are they saying? We're allowed to. All right, source number three is basically summarizing the opinion of the Malbim. In Tradition magazine, quite a number of years ago, I don't remember how many, but it's already quite a number of years, decades almost. Rav Bleich wrote an article about vegetarianism, and he quoted from Yosef Albo from Sefer Yikarim. I just thought it was easier to have it here. We're not going to read the whole thing. It's really fascinating to read. But Rav Yosef Albo has a whole mahalach understanding, starting with Kayin Vehevel. And without getting to all the details, he says as follows. Kayin, as we know, Kayin and Hevel both bring karbanos. Cain brings from the fruit of his labors, literally from Pri Hadama, and Hevel brings me from the tzom, from the sheep. What does Hevel do to bring a carbon? What does he do with the sheep? He kills it. Why doesn't Cain bring a carbon from sheep? So the simplest answer is because he didn't deal with sheep. But says Rav Albo, Cain didn't bring a carbon for sheep because he thought you couldn't bring a carbon from sheep. Why did he think you couldn't bring a carbon for sheep? Yeah, you can't kill sheep. You're not allowed to kill sheep. How are you allowed to kill sheep? He thought that they were like human beings. You can't kill sheep. So what did Hevel think? Hevel thought that you can kill sheep at least for a carbon. What does Hashem accept? He accepts Hevel's carbon and not Cain. So now what does Cain say to himself? If he accepts Hevel's carbon, what does that mean? That can kill sheep. Well, if animals are supposed to be like people, and you can kill sheep, then you know what, says Cain? And kill people. So if you take a look, it's probably the last 20 lines in source number 8. The last word on the line is since. If you can find it, look for that last word on the line, about 20 lines up. It says, since Cain remained confirmed in his opinion that man and animals are inherently equal, he was led to the even more grievous conclusion that just as man is entitled to take the life of an animal, so also he is entitled to take the life of his fellow man. And of course, what does Cain do? Kills Hevel. This position, Albo asserts, was adopted by succeeding generations as well, and it was precisely the notion that men and animals are equal that led not to the renunciation of causing harm to animals and to concern for their welfare, but rather to the notion that violence against one's fellow man was equally acceptable. What happens? People started thinking you can't eat meat, right? So it means animals like people. But they didn't treat animals more respectfully. What did they do? They didn't treat animals like people. They started treating people like animals. And they lost this distinction of the spiritual superiority that humans are supposed to have over the animal kingdom. And therefore, in the last few lines there in source 8, the inevitable result was a total breakdown of the social order, which ultimately culminated in punishment by means of the flood. Subsequent to the flood, meat was permitted to Noah, Albo asserts, in order to impress upon mankind the superiority of man over members of the animal kingdom. So we have here three basic approaches. The Ramban's approach is the reason it was changed was because the animals lose their status. They sinned also. You can call it sin. They behaved. They only sinned because of Noah. They're given Dov and Noach to eat. The Malbim says it became necessary to eat meat. And Rav Abba and Rav Yosef Abba comes along and says the reason that it was necessary to allow humans to eat meat was because people should realize that they're spiritually superior to the animal kingdom. And one shouldn't treat humans like animals. There's a difference between them. Yeah.
So why would it be forbidden to eat meat right after this whole episode?
I mean, right after that. So the way that Rabbi Yosef Albo understands it is that the situation just kept getting deteriorated and deteriorated and deteriorated until the Mabul, and then things had to, and then things changed. So there's a new start after the Mabul. So Hashem says it's like the theoretical let's not kill the animals doesn't work, so to speak. Everyone sees it doesn't work. Yeah.
Does no one say anything about like the people actually getting like less morally good, so they like couldn't handle like not eating meat anymore?
We'll talk a little bit about Rav Kook. We'll see something. Here's the end. Maybe somebody does. I don't know. These are the three that I saw. As I said, I didn't do an exhaustive research of every single opinion. So, but we'll see something Rav Kook mentions. Yeah.
I was wondering if the mitzvah of Shkita is because, you know, that if you need to eat meat even if you think you should kill animals this way and you should kill animals, or only if you want to kill an animal, that's the way you should kill.
The second is correct. There is no mitzvah to go out and say, listen, I'm not interested in eating meat, but I have a chiyuv of shechita. It's not a mitzvah chiyuvit, it's a mitzvah kiyumit, so to speak. Meaning that if I'm going to eat meat, I need to shech. But if I'm not going to eat meat, there's no mitzvah to go out and start shechting animals. Was that your question?
Yes.
Okay. All right, now let's turn the page. And see a couple of few sources about we're post Noach, we're post Matan Torah. What attitude do we have towards the animal kingdom? So there's a very interesting Gemara in Bava Metzia in source number 9, Daf Pei Amud Aleph. The Gemara tells as follows: Dahahu egla dahavu kamam tulei l'shchita. There was a certain calf in egla. Certain calf that was being taken to the slaughter. Azal talya lereshe bekanfe derebi, the kabachi. The calf. This is the way the Gemara tells the story. If you're asking me if it happened precisely, if it's meant to be understood literally, I'll just tell you what the story is. The calf goes and, so to speak, starts hiding behind Rabbi Yehuda Anasi's cloak, and the calf starts crying. I don't think calves really cry, but the impression from the story is the calf had a sense of danger, that something was going to happen to it, and I think animals do sometimes have that sense of danger, and ran to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi for protection. Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda Anasi turned to the calf and he said, Zil, go! Lekach notzarta. That's why you were created. Says the Gemara, Amrei hol v'lo kamerachem since Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not have mercy on the calf, leito alav yisurim, so he should suffer. And the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi suffered from terrible stomach ailments for a long period of time. He was sick for a long period of time. Al yidei maisa holchu. But something happened and he was cured. What happened? Yom achad hava kokan sha'amte de Rebbe beita. The maidservant in Rebbe's house was cleaning up the house. V'havashadya b'nei karkushta v'kakan shaluhu. And she found, I guess, some small rodents around in cleaning up the house. And what was she planning to do with the rodents? Kill them. Amar las, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi turned to the maidservant and said to her, Shavkinu, leave them alone. I don't think he meant let's leave them in the middle of the house, but maybe don't kill them. K'tiv v'rachamav al kol ma'asav. Kadosh Baruch Hu has pity on all of his creations, even on the rodents. So Amrei Son Shemaim, they said, Ha'olu merachem nerachem alei. He had rachamim, let's have rachamim on him. And Rebbe was cured from his ailments. Now you read the story, especially the first part of the story, and what conclusion can you run to? There's a calf going to the slaughter, it asks for mercy. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi says, no, that's why you were created. And what happens to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi? He starts suffering. So what conclusion do you reach? That you really shouldn't be shechting animals. The Marsha, in source number 10, explains as follows. He says, Dezemi midat achzarios. There was some sense of cruelty about what Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did. But he said it's very important. What was the animal that was being taken to the slaughter? It was a calf.
Well, it was a deal.
What?
It was a deal.
So he says, Shaha'egel hu muvchar shebaminim, ve'egel ben yomo karishor, v'rova galim lav lahachi kaimei, Elaruban the radya kaime kidamina beresh parakapara velo amu elasof behema leshchita dahainu besofa ba bitchilata leradya kaime. If it would have been a fully grown cow that was already older, so then what do you do? And you can shecht it and you can eat it. But it was a calf. What should you really do with the calf? Adira is having a breakdown now. The calf doesn't have to be taken to a slaughter. They'll be fine. Why do you have to shech the small calf? Let the animal grow. Let the animal plow, whatever the animal does. Right. Let it if it's a female animal, let it maybe... give birth and give to other animals, be a milk, and then eventually you'll slaughter it. So says the Marsha, which Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's problem was not that he promoted the slaughter of meat. That's not a problem. But that it was dafka, a calf, that could have lived for a few years longer and then gone to the slaughter, that was his mistake. And that's why he shouldn't have been, to a certain extent, so callous and said, that's why you were created. No, the calf has learned, let it go and live, etc. And then, at some point, then it'll be taken to slaughter to be eaten. Yeah.
I don't know if this is like too much of a tangent, but is there anything wrong or is there anything correct about his statement, go, this is why you were created? Like, is this actually why you were created?
It seems from the Gemara that Rabbi Yehuda was somewhat callous. That he didn't have rachamim.
So, but is there any truth to the fact that God created animals for
God? Hashem did create the animal kingdom for the use of, for the proper use of mankind.
Is there
a... Yeah. It says if you take a look in Chumash Bereishis, by Adam Arishon, Conquer the land. Uridu bidgatayam uva'ofashamayim uva'chol chayah ha'rameset al ha'aretz. And Rabbi Nuartskol translates, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea, the bird of the sky, and every living thing that moves on the earth. So they were given over to the dominion of mankind, if it's done properly. Okay. In source number 11, the Nadav Yehuda deals with the issue of Tzar Balei Chayim. Now it's a famous tshuva because he actually talks about somebody else. Somebody asked the Nadav Yehuda whether it's okay to go hunting. And it seems that the question was to go hunting for the sake of hunting. Hunting for the sake of hunting. And the Nadav Yehuda is very much against it. But because he says, our hunters in the Torah are not exactly our big role models. Nimrod, Esav, they're not exactly the people that we put our pictures up in the sukkah. Somebody mentioned to me today, right? But he points out in the middle, by the way, that hunting does not necessarily involve Tzar Balei Chayim. Because Tzar Balei Chayim is when you take an animal and what do? You cause pain. But taking an animal and killing it is not Tzar Balei Chayim. Because Tzar Balei Chayim, as he points out in Source 11, is Litzaro Ulahanicho Bachayim. If I torture an animal, if I cause it pain and while it's alive and extend its life when it's in pain, or extend pain when it's alive, that's Tzar Balei Chayim. To take an animal and kill it is not Tzar Balei Chayim. He's against hunting for sport. Vehemently against it. But if somebody were to take, I guess in modern times, even then, he's already talking about a gun. Somebody takes a gun and shoots an animal in the head and the animal dies, says that's not Tzar Balei Chayim. Tzar Balei Chayim is to keep an animal alive. Now, again, there may be certain hunting practices that might cause unusual pain to an animal. But he's talking about if you went and you took a gun and you shot an animal in the head and it died, it's not Tzar Balei Chayim. Tzar Balei Chayim is to cause pain and prolong its life. Just as an aside, Rav Avadi Yosef has a tshuva about asking, prohibiting people to go to bullfights. He says, because bullfights are pure Tzar Balei Chayim. Part of the whole bullfight process is not to kill the bull immediately. Because if you kill the bull right away, it's no fun, so to speak. There's no adventure. So they actually stab the bull. No, this is what I understand. They actually stab the bull different times to cause the bull to get angry and hurt and more upset. And they mamish cause it pain for the sake of pain. And he says, therefore, it's also to go to. Because it's also to cause Tzar Balei Chayim. And if you go to a bullfight and you pay admission and you scream, ole, ole, or whatever it is, then you're promoting evil things. So don't go to a bullfight. Okay. One last point on this thing, and then I'll take some questions. In source number 12, the Sefer Chinuch talks about Shechita specifically. And he writes, V'od nomar b'tama Shechita min atzavar b'sakin baduk. Why when you shecht, you have to shecht from the neck and use a knife that's totally smooth without any nicks in the knife. K'dei shelo nitzaer ba'alei chayim yotamidai. We shouldn't cause any unnecessary pain to the animal. So a whole thing of Shechita is to try to minimize any unnecessary pain. Ki atori hitiran la'adam l'malato lizon mehem l'chol tzrachav. Adam here doesn't mean Adam Arishon. It means after Matan Torah. It means after Noah's time. That a person is allowed to shecht, but lo litzaram chinam. So when we shecht in a way that's as painless as can be, or in a way that just doesn't cause pain, has to be swift. When you shecht, you can't pause, you can't stop midway, it passes the shechita, so it's extremely swift, and therefore the shechita, right, is done in a way to minimize any pain. And there have been studies that are done, like we all know that sometimes you touch something hot, but you don't, but it doesn't register for a second or two that it's hot, and all of a sudden, ah! Right? So they've done studies with brain waves that in shechita, that by the time the animal would feel the pain, it's dead. In other words, the initial pain that's caused, it's so swift and so quick that by the time any pain would register in the brain and then would send the nervous system. So it's meant to be a painless death. Okay, so what we see here is that there's no tzar balechayim if you kill an animal. Shechita is meant to minimize any unnecessary pain. And as long as one is, there's no cruelty in killing animals, assuming that the animals are at the stage of life, so to speak, where it's, that's what they should be used for. Yeah. You're asking, going back to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi.
That's the first question, yeah.
Yeah. So, what it was, what the Gemara seems to say is there's a certain callousness. It may have also been that the eagle sensed danger and was looking for some reprieve. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was, on someone of his level, a little bit too quick and too callous to say that's why you were created. He may have said in this case, I don't know if he was against the shechting of all young calves, but a young calf who sends danger, he could have said, leave the calf alone. There'll be plenty of time when it grows up. Let it do something else in the meantime.
Okay, and the second question is about the hunting.
Yeah.
Leaving aside the whole point of that animals, to like that 99% will not die from one shot.
I don't know, I've never gone hunting.
Head,
what?
And they will not hit it in the head with a 99% chance.
I don't know.
That, like, if it's okay to kill an animal like that, then we wouldn't need shechita. If that's an acceptable way to kill an animal, then we would be able to eat it like that.
No, the halachic reasons, we can't eat the animal. No, but the point is, if a person's going hunting for sport, he just says like this, it's not tzar b'alechayim. The other Buddha says, it's not tzar b'alechayim if you go hunting for sport. It's also for other reasons. He says, why would a person just kill an animal for sport?
But if we say that shechita is, we do shechita so that the animal doesn't suffer.
Hashem said, if you want to eat the meat, you have to do shechita. The Sefer HaChinuch points out that many of the rules of shechita minimize any unnecessary pain. But the Torah doesn't say, eat meat as long as you kill it in some way of painless manner. You have to do shechita if you want to eat the meat. The Sefer HaChinuch points out that it's done in a manner that minimizes any unnecessary pain. A person is allowed, humans are allowed to kill animals if it's for important uses. But that shouldn't be abused. One could argue that there was maybe a time in history where one needed animal fur for warmth and for this, and that was the way to get it. If a person is wearing a fur coat for prestige, right, and there's a lot of other things that keep people warm, but they just, then you can ask the question, is it so necessary to kill an animal for that? On the other hand, maybe the animal's being killed for some other reason, it might as well make use of the fur. They claim that the Native Americans, what Americans call Indians, would kill a buffalo, but when they would kill a buffalo, they would make use of every single last piece of the buffalo. And they didn't just kill buffalo for the sake. They ate the meat, they used the skin, they used the bones, they used the this, they used the that, and they killed buffalo when they needed those things. But otherwise, they didn't kill buffalo. And it was more of the white man who came down the plains of the American continent and just almost wiped out the buffalo population. Yeah.
Does Tzar Balechayim extend to like the psychological state of the animal? Because if we said that they feel the same anxiety when like they're able to sense danger,
So it could be, but again, the pasuk that I read earlier tells us that the animal kingdom was given over to the dominion of man, and therefore, what proper dominion is okay. We don't want to cause any unnecessary pain to animals, but if it's an important thing, then that's a different story. So, for instance, if one were to talk about animal experimentation, one might be able to make a distinction between causing pain to animals to try to find a cure for cancer versus causing pain to animals to try to manufacture a new shampoo. And that the first one may be something that's reasonable for what we want to do. And the second one, one may argue, may not be. In some European countries, I know it's a big problem.
Germany.
Yeah.
Is there truth to what they say, that it's not
to come along and to tell you that that there is zero pain? The studies that I've read, a little bit, I haven't read all the literature, have done studies with the brain waves that shechita, when done properly, right, causes a extremely minimal amount of pain, so much so that the animal is dead before it can actually feel it. It's interesting to note that when one talks about humane practices, that one of the first decrees issued by the Nazis when they took over power in Germany in the 1930s was to ban shechita because of the cruelty, right? And because we know that there was such a humane society, the Nazis, and they were so worried about not causing cruelty to anything. That was one of the first things that was banned, except in terms of stunning the animals, and there's many of the tshuvas of the Svi Deyesh about it. It was all big to-do at the time. I find it hard to imagine that there isn't a certain underlying sense of some degree of anti-Semitism that exists. You know, trying to find something and then, you know, yelling it's all about human rights. Yeah.
For the Rav Obadiah Yosef thing.
About bullfights?
Yeah. If he said that it was
usher. Says it's usher to go to a bullfight because you're supporting Tzar Balei Chaim.
So then, wouldn't you think that veal would be
also
to eat?
There's a tshuva of Moshe Feinstein about eating veal. I'm not up to date about it, but my understanding is that with eating veal, that at least in some cases, they force feed the animal, they keep him in a very tight pen, they don't let them roam around. And it's a lot of Tzar Balei Chaim. Yeah, there may very well be something to be said. There may be things that... Okay, again, one can start talking about what is considered reasonable, right? For reasonable uses of mankind, versus unreasonable uses of mankind. I don't remember the bottom line tshuva, what Rav Moshe says at the end, to take a look at it again, but I think he talks about the fact that there shouldn't be any unnecessary Tzar Balei Chaim. Okay, I want to go on to discuss a halachic point and then a little bit about the Rav Kook. One of the questions that arises is, up until now we've said that this, you know, that the Torah allows us to eat meat. Is there any situation where we need to eat meat, where the Torah obligates us to eat meat? So we'll come back to that at the very end. But in source number 13, the Gemara in Shabbos talks about Onik Shabbos. And the Gemara says, "Bamem mango, how do I have Onik Shabbos?" Rav Yehuda Brei de Rav Shmuel bar Shilas Mishmei de Rav Amar, "Betavshel shel trudin, I can eat some sort of beet dish, not meat, beets, right? V'dagim gedolim, and fish, v'rashi, shumen and garlic. So if you eat anything l'kavod Shabbos and you enjoy it, that's Onik Shabbos. Now, it does mention fish. It does not mention meat. The Shulchan Aruch, in source number 14, in Hilchos Shabbos, in Siman Reish Nun, it's Hilchos Shabbos over here, Siman Reish Nun, the Shulchan Aruch says, Yarbe bebasir v'yayin u'migdonot kefi yichotoh. You should have a lot of meat and wine on Shabbos. So that would seem to say that on Shabbos, what should you do? Have meat. However, the Mishnah Brura, earlier in Siman Reish Mem Bet, writes as follows. He says, "Hada amru d'tzarch lango b'dagim b'gedolim v'rashi shumer tavshel shel tradin shezei yamachol chashuv bizmaneim." The Gemara mentioned that menu because that's what people used to eat in their time. V'chein b'chol makom u'makom l'fi minhago ya'angu b'machol u'mamashkim ha'chashuv l'amoneg. What should you have? What you enjoy, that's what you should eat. That's your own Shabbos. In Siman Reish Nun, when it mentions meat, because the assumption is most people like eating meat. So if you like eating meat, what should your onik Shabbos be? Meat. And if you don't like eating meat, so do you have to eat meat? No. Eat something else. Eat what you enjoy. So the Achronim basically paskin that when it comes to Shabbos, right, what the onik Shabbos is what you enjoy eating. If it's meat, fine. If it's fish, fine. If it's garlic, fine. If it's beets, fine. Whatever you enjoy eating. Related to this, in the Shulchan Aruch, which talks about in Shulchan Aruch Yerodeh Siman Shimon Aleph, which talks about the dinim of an onein. Now, I don't know if you know very much about an onein, but who is an onein? One of the close relatives, you know, somebody of a relative, somebody passed away. One of the close relatives. After the person passed away, before the burial, has a status of onein. One of the halachas of an onein is that an onein is not allowed to eat meat and drink wine. An avel, after burial, an avel is allowed to eat meat. But between the death and the burial, he's not allowed to eat meat and he's not allowed to drink wine. There are other halachas of onein as well. What happens if somebody passes away Friday afternoon and isn't going to be buried till Sunday morning? So what happens over Shabbos? So if you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch in source number 16, we'll skip the beginning, right? The first part, the first bracket, well, the middle bracket says, "Ein ochel basav, ein ochel seyayin," but the last bracket towards the bottom, it says, "U'b'Shabbos v'yom tov, ochel basav v'shol seyayin." On Shabbos and Yom Tov, you eat meat and you can drink wine. There isn't a din of aninus. And then the Ramah adds in two words in parentheses. What two words does he add in? Im yirtze. What does that mean? If you want. Meaning, what shouldn't you think? That you have to eat meat and drink wine. It's just that you're allowed to. Says Rabbi Kiva Eger, right below that, says im yirtze ayin b'tshuvas v'shava kohen shehela dekoi rak al Shabbos. Meat is optional. Meat and wine is optional on Shabbos. Aval b'yom tov mechuyav la'echol basa. On Yom Tov you're required to eat meat because in addition to oneg Shabbos, Yom Tov has a separate mitzvah of simcha. And Chazal say ve'in simcha ela Bibasa. But then he writes, "Va'al kol panim lishtos yayin," or at least you have a mitzvah of drinking wine, because the Gemara in Pesachim says, "Ein simcha ela bibasa, ve'in simcha ela biyayin." Now I could give almost a whole shiur, and I decided not to, on to understand the mitzvah of simcha. So I'm just going to bikitzur point out that it's not, the Rishonim deal with the two things, with basar and yayin. And the question is there an absolute chiyuv of eating basar on Yom Tov? According to a number of achronim, the mitzvah, there may be more of a need to drink wine than eating basar. That if one eats basar, it's like a mitzvah min hamuvchar on Yom Tov, but may not be an absolute obligation. It may not be absolutely obligated to eat meat on Yom Tov. And even if you say there is an absolute obligation to eat meat on Yom Tov, it might apply only to men. Women may not necessarily have an obligation to eat meat or drink wine. On Shabbos, it's pretty much agreed upon that there's no absolute obligation to eat meat. On Yom Tov, it's a bit of a discussion. Okay, finally, I just want to, in the remaining few minutes, talk a little bit about Rav Kook's opinion. Again, taking from this article in Tradition magazine, and you can read the whole thing. I didn't photocopy the whole article. But on the one hand, he points out that vegetarianism seems to be an ideal. And where does he get this idea from, that vegetarianism is an ideal? Where does he get this from? From Adam Arishon. That originally the world was going to be, human beings are going to be vegetarians. So it seems that there's some ideal. Things changed, and it's certainly not mandatory now. But nevertheless, Rav Kook is very emphatic against people who promote vegetarianism as if that's what everybody should be doing now. It may be a theoretical idea, but he's against the idea of let's promote vegetarian, let's try to convert everybody to become a vegetarian. And he's very much against it, and he has four different reasons. Bikitsur says reason number one is that you would think that this is the biggest problem facing mankind now. We all have only a certain number of resources. We can only rally the people. We can only try to make a certain number of changes at any given time. Vegetarianism shouldn't be our top priority in the world. What does he mention here? He says enmity between nations, racial discrimination. We can talk about human being suffering, poverty, whatever you want to talk about. There's a lot in the world that should be more of a priority than let's promote vegetarianism. And he says that's the first reason why he's against making a big deal. Everybody should be a vegetarian. Secondly, and he mentioned something I think was mentioned before, and he takes it to the extreme. He says it's impossible right now for man not to totally conquer, for everybody to conquer their desire to eat meat. It's just not possible. That was the question you asked before. About human beings of... So he takes it to the extreme. He says, if you're going to tell people you can't eat meat and that animals are like people, what are people going to end up doing?
Marrying them.
What?
Marrying them.
What'd you say?
Marrying them.
No, not quite. He says cannibalism. I mean, that's very much of an extreme. But he says that we don't live at a time where the average human being can just, say, I'm giving up meat altogether. He says, and it's going to lead to disastrous results. Thirdly, he mentions the problem of Kain v'Hevel. Kain. If you're going to tell people not to eat meat, they're not going to treat animals any better. What are they going to do? Treat humans worse? Or say that if we're like animals, then I can behave like an animal. It's not going to raise a heightened, status of the animals. It's going to lower the status of mankind. And if you take a look, if you turn the page to the last page, in number four, the Roman numeral number four there, in the upper left, he says, in an insightful psychological observation, Rav Kook remarks that even individuals who are morally degenerate seek to channel their natural moral instincts in some direction. Frequently, they seek to give expression to moral drives by becoming particularly scrupulous with regard to some specific aspect of moral behavior. He says, even people who are immoral have a certain inner sense. They have to show that they are moral. With almost prescient knowledge of future events, Rav Kook argues that were vegetarianism to become the norm, people might become quite callous with regard to human welfare and human life, and express their instinctive moral feelings in an exaggerated concern for animal welfare. These comments summon to mind the spectacle of Germans watching with equanimity while their Jewish neighbors were dispatched to crematoria, and immediately thereafter turning their attention to the welfare of the household pets that had been left behind. That's again taken to the extreme, but pointing out that if you're going to promote animal welfare, then people say, okay, so that's where I'm going to put my morals into animal welfare, and who cares about human welfare and human beings? He concludes, by the way, saying that Rav Kook is not against individuals who decide to become vegetarians. He doesn't think there's any wrong with an individual deciding that they want to be a vegetarian. What he was against is making a mass movement out of it. That's what we should all be doing right now. Finally, in the last piece from Rav Kook, there's a thing that many people know about. There's Rav Kook makes a statement in his Peirush on the Siddur. At the end of davening, we quote the end of Shmon Esrei. We quote the pasuk from Malachi: "Va'arva Lashem Minchat Yehuda v'Yushalayim Kimei Olam Achshanim Kadmaniot." It talks about a korban mincha. A korban mincha, what comes from flour, not from animals. And Rav Kook says over there something along the lines that in the future, the karbonos are going to be from the vegetation, not from the animals. Slow down. So it's a very interesting statement. It also seems at first glance very strange, right? Because I am quite certain that Rav Kook davened the same musaf on Shabbos that I davened, and he davened the same musaf on Yamim Tovim that I davened. And we clearly state in every musaf tefillah that we daven that we hope to go back to the Beis HaMikdash and to bring the Karbanos musaf, like it says in the Torah, Uviyom HaShabbos Shnei Chavasim B'nei Shana Tamimim U'Shnei Yisroel Misolus Mincha B'lulav HaShemen. Talks about bringing animals. He said that every Shabbos. I'm certain of it. Right? I'm sure on Yontav he davened the same Yontav davening everybody else davened. He talks about the Lugan, the Beis HaMikdash should be rebuilt. So, in this, I found this online, this last piece, source number 18. I don't even know what it is, but I hope it's accurate. Okay. It says here that in a letter that Rav Kook wrote in 1919, he wrote as follows: "With regard to sacrifices, it is more correct to believe that all aspects will be restored to their place." Sounds like there will be animal sacrifices. "We should not be overly troubled by the views of European culture. In the future, Hashem's word to his people will elevate all the foundations of culture to a level above that attainable by human reason. It is inappropriate to think that sacrifices only reflect the primitive idea of a worship of the flesh. The service possesses a holy inner nature that cannot be revealed in its beauty without the illumination of Hashem's light to his people," etc., etc. He says, we don't understand sacrifices nowadays. The time the Beis HaMikdash will come, we'll have much a clearer understanding. But nevertheless, and he writes, it's quotes here, that he says that in the future, the animal kingdom will, the opposite of Niskanu Adoros, the animal kingdom will become on a higher level. They won't be the animals that we know nowadays. He says they'll be advanced, they'll be kim'at human-like. That's what it says in Kabbalistic sources. But so what do you do with Yidam Shmon Esrei? I was talking to Rabbi Manning about this the other day. What he said, it's a known question. What he suggested is as follows. There are opinions regarding Yemos HaMashiach that when Mashiach comes, it's not going to be just one thing that's always going to be that way. But within the Yemos HaMashiach, there may be various stages. There'll be the earlier days of Yemos HaMashiach and the later days of Yemos HaMashiach. And the time period between the earlier days and the later days may be a very, very long period of time. What he suggests is that maybe when Rav Kook is talking about that at some point the karbonos won't be from animals, maybe like the end of the days of Mashiach, at some future, like not when Mashiach comes. When Mashiach comes, things are going to return to like recycling, like we had in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. But maybe at some future, much later time, things might change, the animals might become, at least according to Kabbalistic thought, on a higher level, and at that point things might change. But in the immediate future, when Mashiach will come, things will be like they were in the Beis Hamikdash. And finally, as you mentioned, a number of you mentioned earlier, even though there doesn't seem to be, there's one piece of meat that as Jews, we actually dream about. We dream about eating it, we daven about eating it, we talk about eating it, and we really, really can't wait to eat it. Because there is one piece of meat that everyone agrees that we all have to eat and we all want to eat. And that one piece of meat is the kazayit from the Korban Pesach that we eat at the end of the Seder. Right? The Korban Pesach, all you had to eat was the kazayit, and you had to eat it at the end. The zecher to the kazayit of the Korban Pesach, we eat at the end of the Seder, the afikomen. But that's one piece of meat that that everyone's chayef to eat. And in reality, it's a piece of meat that we dream about. So Bezus Hashem, we still have over 2 months, and we should be zocher this year, lechol sham min azvachim min apsachim, or min apsachim min azvachim, azvachim min apsachim, to eat from the Korban Pesach this year, that even those of us who are vegetarians, I am sure, will are looking forward to that one special piece of meat.